Welcome to the WWE Podcast, your place for the most passionate wrestling analysis on the web.
Just turn Roman heel. What is WWE waiting for?
When other wrestling podcasts put you to sleep, you can count on the WWE Podcast to keep you engaged and asking for more.
I've been watching wrestling for over 20 years, and that was one of the best matches I've ever seen.
If you're easily offended, this may not be the show for you.
Whatever happened to the men being able to physically retaliate against the women in WWE? This is a fantasy environment.
This is unlike any other wrestling analysis. So without any further delay, let's get the show started right now.
Hey guys, welcome to the WWE Podcast. Thank you for joining me. It is Wednesday, March 13th, 2019, as I record this. Again, still in travel status for my work. And I will be returning home tomorrow. So my next show won't be until Sunday, and I will probably be doing one of my specialty shows, whether it's the wrestling nostalgia portion of the show or the what if segment, which I haven't done in a while, and I need to get back to that. So it'll definitely be one of the two, and I have a lot of singular topic ones as well that I would love to get into for things that aren't even really storyline wise current, but just in general about the business today. And so there's just, if you're a wrestling fan, there is never, ever a shortage of things to talk about, to be excited about, to complain about, and that's for damn sure, or critique, or as we professionally put it, we like to provide constructive criticism for the product. And that's, honestly, it's true. If you're a true fan of the show, or a true fan, more importantly, not of just this show, but of WWE or any professional wrestling product that's out there, if you complain just to complain and you have no positive motivation behind it and it's just to complain, then you don't truly love the product. When I critique the product, it is to make it better. And it is things that I see that I feel could be better. So, guys, there's just so much to get to. So much to get to. I just finished watching SmackDown Live, where Vince McMahon was once again toying with Kofi Kingston, as we get the teaser before we just get what we all know we're going to get, and that is Kofi getting a one-on-one with Daniel Bryan at WrestleMania, which I hope is a one-on-one. I don't need multi-person matches. If I had my way, no match on the card outside of the Andre the Giant Memorial Battle Royal, which I'm sorry means nothing, would be a multi-person match. It would be one-on-one, 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 and anything else is lazy booking. And that's just all it is. And or the creative team has not done their job to build up two individuals, a protagonist and an antagonist, a good guy and a bad guy, to make the audience care about those two individuals, men or women, finally facing off on the biggest stage of them all. And so we have to throw in a third component because, more is better. And just like adding Charlotte because she's a great athlete, it'll make the match better. No, it won't. You know why? Because I care more about the story than I do the actual quality of the near fall, the near falls and the amazing maneuvers. I care about the story more. And I think that's getting lost in today's product of just flip-flying, 1,000 flips, 720 splashes, just jaw-dropping stuff that is, it's amazing to see, but where does it end? And I think that a lot of performers today are using wrestlers. Whoa, I almost used corporate speak. A lot of wrestlers today are using their amazing agility, and is absolutely amazing athleticism and the things they can do. It's absolutely stunning. That's not the question. The problem is that they are covering this with poor storytelling. And yeah, you could tell me, well, they're telling their story in the ring. Yeah, they are. But when everyone's telling the same type of story, it gets to the point of how much further can you raise the bar? And furthermore, it becomes a little less realistic where they're doing death-defying things only to not really sell them and to only minutes later forget that a devastating maneuver was just performed on them to get up and, oh, well, it's my turn to beat on you. Then it's your turn to beat on me. And at the end of the match, we're both standing and there's just no sign of actual selling. That's what's missing. And things just go too quickly. Matches go too quickly. And one other thing I'm just going to quickly say. I'm getting off the rails here. I mean, we had just started out here, but sorry, guys. The referee's three count, and this has been a pet peeve of mine for years now in WWE, and I don't know what's going on. Maybe it's people are so have such short attention spans that even 3 seconds, a legitimate 3 seconds, is too long. And what I mean by that is if you guys watch the referee's three count in any given match, it's so fast. It's not 3 seconds. It's about 1.5 to 2 seconds. It's 1, 2, 3. I mean, I like a little drama in between the counts. And I think front and center when I think of that is actually WrestleMania 30 with The Undertaker. And when he lost to Brock Lesnar, as we all infamously know, the three count was so anticlimactic. Look how quick that three count was. There was no 1, 2, 3. It was just 1, 2, 3. The streak is over. I mean, it's faster than the second hand on a clock. It's a small thing, but it over time adds up and it reduces the drama in matches. It's not 3 seconds. And people may be, no, it doesn't matter. The cadence and pace of a three count matters because that's how you win the match. So, yeah, well, unless it's a submission match, I get that. Okay, guys, we're talking about pinfalls. It's just something I've noticed, and maybe you guys have or haven't, but it's something, it just goes too fast. Slow down. It's something so easily correctable. And you may say, well, you know, yeah, that's just the way it is. Well, why? Why does it have to be that? Are we that short in attention? Who told the referees that they have to count so damn fast? Maybe they don't even know they're doing it. But I notice, and it takes away the drama from me when the count is so quick, especially when a referee knows that it's the finish of a match. Their pace of the three count quickens. Just take a look. It's a subtle thing, but I've noticed it. And you just know the referee knows that it's the finish and the pace of his three count changes. All right, well, that's something so small, but it adds up in my mind. And WrestleMania 30 was just, nothing was less anticlimactic than that three count. I mean, there should have been more drama. That three count should have been drawn out. Okay, well, anyway, guys, quick, early, off-the-rails topic, but it's just something that came to mind as I was recording this. But, all right, let's circle back, and thank you guys for joining me again. This is the WWE Podcast. I want to thank you for becoming a listener of the show. Many of you are coming on board lately over the last couple of months. I do appreciate it. I'm one of the top four searches when you type in WWE into an Apple Podcasts search engine. If you do that, you should see me as one of the top four, trying to get into that top three, search results. And that's pretty cool. Am I the top three? You may say, you're not the top three in the top three of the sports and recreation podcast. I know that. Okay, I'm not in the top in the charts if you go into the charts of the Apple Podcasts. But I think it's important positioning to be in the search results when someone just types in WWE into the search engine for people who are searching for wrestling content. So I just a cool little thing that I noticed, and I think it's just important if this show is going to continue to grow, and it is, and I'm really appreciative of all of my listeners, new and old, and it's just a cool thing to do. And I would encourage anybody to get into podcasting. I really would. I mean, you may not think you have the voice for it. You may not think that you have the equipment for it. You may not think that you have a topic for it, but let me tell you something. There's a listener for everyone out there. You have a story, you have an interest, you have a passion for something that someone wants to listen to. And it takes time, it takes a little bit of practice to understand what voice you need to have, the pace in which you talk, the volume in which you talk, you know, getting the right microphone. It's not difficult to get set up. What's difficult is to become relevant, to stand out from the thousands and thousands of others who may be talking about the same thing you are. And believe it or not, there are other wrestling podcasts out there. It's really unbelievable. I can't believe that other people are talking about wrestling other than this show. So I would just encourage you guys, if you are interested in doing it, by all means, I think it's a great way to get your voice out there. It's relatively inexpensive, and it is a really a outlet for me during the week to be able to talk wrestling with other like-minded and passionate fans. So I would just highly recommend it to anybody who may be thinking about doing it. Just go for it. Okay, so quick thing on Monday Night Raw from last night that I didn't cover, two nights ago, that I didn't cover in my last show. And I don't know why. I think being in travel status really just messes with my head and the time of day it is and all that. But Batista and Triple H, which is something I didn't cover, and Bobby Lashley's win for the IC title. So let me get to Triple H and Batista. You know, I've listened to some other shows, and sometimes that's not a good thing for me to do because it sways my opinion and what I tell you guys, and I don't want to just be a regurgitator of other shows. But I'm going to go against the majority opinion here, not just to be controversial and contradictory and have a different voice. But so here's the majority opinion that at least I've been hearing and listening to, is that the Batista-Triple H segment was a disaster, and that Batista felt, it looked like and appeared that he lost his way during the promo, and that it did make a whole lot of sense that we were just supposed to know what Batista wants, and that Triple H was just going to not give it to him, but then gave it to him, right? And that he looked nervous out there, Batista. And while I can see that perspective, and I can understand that standpoint of Batista looking nervous and that he tripped over some words or just repeated himself multiple times, I get all that. And that many people felt also that it detracted from the build of the match. I'm going to take the other side of the aisle here. I think that was, I wouldn't say it was a home run by any means. Maybe a double. If you're into baseball, baseball's on my mind with only being a couple weeks away from opening day. So I'm going to use a baseball analogy. I'd say it was a double. And the reason I say that is I think it elevated the interest of the match. I would say it accomplished that goal. I do understand that Batista did repeat himself multiple times. The issue I do have, and the reason it's not a home run or even a triple, is because Batista's not telling us why he wants this match with Triple H. Maybe we'll get that answer, but that should be established at the very beginning of the program. Why do you want this match with Triple H? You've already beaten Triple H multiple times, and you've already beat him at WrestleMania, which I guess they're just going to ignore. Which, for those of you who may not know or haven't seen it, WrestleMania 21 was when these two went at it, and Batista beat Triple H. So for Batista to come back, I need a reason. He did what he did and dragged Ric Flair out and said, "Do I have your attention now?" Well, how long has he been trying to get Triple H's attention? I mean, what do you mean, do I have your attention now? How long have you been trying to get it? That I'm not following. I'm not following that at all. I mean, he was intense. Batista's got a great camera presence. He's very sharp-dressed. He looks like a star. He's got all the credentials. All of it. The intensity. All of that. But this seems a bit misplaced and missing some elements to tell a key story and just basic stuff. I'm not asking for an intricate story here. These two have a history that could tell itself. I mean, the story could tell itself is what I was trying to say. The story could tell itself based on the history between these two. It's very well documented. It's a long history. I'm just not following the reason why Batista would want Triple H when Triple H is the one that's never beat him. It just seems a little backwards. I'm not following that. I would like a little bit more of a mission statement or a reasoning behind why. You know what I want. Well, why? Why do you want that? And how long have you been trying to get Triple H's attention? It's not like he's been doing things and Triple H has been ignoring him. I mean, maybe some social media back and forth nonsense stuff has been going on. But as far as if you haven't been following that, you've just been watching WWE TV, you have no idea. So educate us. Just some basic, just a basic foundation of a story here is some of the elements are missing. But other than that, I like I like Batista's intensity. I like Triple H's intensity. I thought that Triple H kept it together well and was the anchor for that exchange, even when Batista missed a couple of lines, which I think he did, and big deal. Batista has always been and has publicly admitted he hates the microphone. He even admitted on, what, SmackDown 1000? He hates the mic. It scares him. He's not a great talker. But when he gets it and he delivers his lines correctly, they're effective. And I think here he was intense and he tried to make up for his miscues by being super intense. And I think it was effective. I came out of this saying, yeah, I want to see this match. Is a little bit of logic missing? Is a reason for these two going at it missing? Why did Triple H just suddenly decide that after the whole segment saying that I'm not going to give you what you want, all of a sudden give him what he wants? Maybe Triple H was thinking, his character, in the storyline perspective, thinking, well, I don't know what he wants, but I'm not going to give it to him. But if it's a fight, well, I want that too, so I'm going to give it to him. I mean, maybe that's why he did. Maybe that Batista was, Triple H was unaware that he just wanted a match with Batista, Triple H. I don't know. I mean, maybe Triple H had no idea that Batista wanted a match with him, and so that's what he decided. Maybe he wanted money. I mean, who knows? You know, when you think about it from a storyline perspective. But overall, I thought this was effective. It was a double. And so anyway, I just hear a lot of trashing on that segment. I didn't hate it. I really didn't. And I, you know, it's a bit of a nostalgia match for me, especially, you know, back in 2000. Hold on, WrestleMania 21 was 2005. So in 2005, I was 20 years old. Man, I'm 34 now. So 14 years ago, these two had a match at WrestleMania. And so it's been quite a while, and if WWE is smart, and I think that they are, they will draw on that history. There's a long history, and we don't need to pretend these two are brand new opponents. And there's a lot they can grasp at. So one last thing on Bobby Lashley, then we'll take a quick break. Is Bobby Lashley recaptured the Intercontinental title on Monday night against Finn Balor, who WWE just has seemingly no idea what to do with. No idea. First of all, I don't think Bobby should have ever dropped the belt to begin with. He was gaining momentum. If you guys listened to my show about a month ago, I said that Bobby Lashley has never been more relevant than he was at the time that he just beat down Finn Balor. He was gaining momentum with Lio Rush, and he became a legitimate heel, a character I care about, for the first time since he returned over a year ago. So I don't understand the reason for him dropping it. You could say, well, Finn Balor beat Lio Rush. Well, that doesn't do Finn Balor any favors to beat his manager, who at times WWE has booked to make it look like he's the equal of Finn Balor in their matches. And I know Lio Rush can wrestle, but from a pecking order perspective, Finn Balor is leaps and bounds above where Lio Rush is in the food chain. I mean, that's just fact. You mean ability-wise, they're probably comparable in terms of what they can do inside the ring. But from the education that WWE has given us to where Finn Balor is and Lio Rush coming in just as a manager, but then all of a sudden he's the equal of Finn Balor inside the ring? No. And Finn Balor beats Lio Rush to capture the Intercontinental title rather than beating Bobby Lashley. And then Bobby Lashley beats him on a distraction from Lio Rush. And you get a Bobby Lashley recapturing the Intercontinental title. I mean, long title reigns, I think, are now defined in WWE by more than 3 weeks. I think that's now considered a long title reign. I'm a fan of long, long title reigns. And when I say long, I'm talking 6 months plus. 6 months plus. I love long title reigns. You know why? because when it changes hands, it means something. If it goes back and forth and back and forth, or it just goes from me to him to her to him, or, well, there's no intergender belt, but from me to him to the other guy to that guy, back to me to him, I mean, number one, you can't keep up, and it just becomes exhausting. It means less when more people have it. I mean, that's just business 101. And when you have a long reign, it makes news when a belt changes hands. It should be something special. It should mean something when a belt is exchanges hands, not just, oh, well, he's the Intercontinental Champion now. Well, he'll probably drop it in a week. I mean, I don't want to think like that. These belts mean less when they change hands more. And that's unfortunately where we're at with the Intercontinental Championship and to some extent the United States Championship, which is why I hope Samoa Joe has a long reign. And remember my definition of long, which some of you may feel is an eternity. But think about this. I mean, this is almost unfathomable. Unfathomable when you think about this. At least in this modern era, Bruno Sammartino held the belt for 11 years total over two reigns. His longest reign was 7.5 years. Just think about that. In today's era, and I understand it's a totally different world now, but it's the same product. It's the same product, whether Vince McMahon wants to admit it or not. He just has created a new version of it. It's the same thing. You're doing the same thing. You are having two competitors wrestle in a ring with a predetermined outcome to create entertainment. That's wrestling. That's professional wrestling. And just think about that, though. 7.5 years. Actually, 7.67 years, if you want to be exact. 2,803 days. It's mind-boggling to think about that. Mind-boggling. If you were to extrapolate that back, that would be from 2011, mid-2011 until now, that someone was the WWE champion. I understand that'll never, ever, ever happen again. I mean, these reigns that CM Punk had, which was over 400 days, I mean, that was in and of itself amazing. AJ Styles' run was amazing. Those seemed like an eternity, but I love long reigns, and I understand that'll never happen again with that 2,803 days. I understand all that. But when people talk about this, oh my God, he's had the belt forever. Really? Has he really? Think about that. Just a little wrestling history for you. Okay, quick break, guys, for the take some time for the sponsor of the show. And on the other side, guys, whew, get ready. SmackDown Live and my thoughts are waiting for you right on the other side of this. Okay, so let me ask you guys a question. Would you like to increase your cash flow? Kind of a stupid question, right? Who wouldn't? Well, I would encourage you guys to go to 247forlife.com. That's 247forlife.com. And when you go to this site, you can just put in your email, some basic info, and you can get hooked up into an amazing opportunity where it will help you do just that, increase your cash flow. Why is it? You know, look, when you think about it, why is it that some people just seem to make money no matter what the economic climate is, while the rest of us have trouble even scraping by? Well, 3% of the population controls 97% of the wealth in the free world today. Think about that. 3% controls 97% of the wealth. So what are they doing that we're not? Head over to 247forlife.com. Again, this is not some get-rich-quick scheme. You just go to the site, enter your basic information, and you get free instant access to the most powerful wealth creation system on the internet today. It'll get you a lot closer to that 3% group. Remember, guys, they control 97% of the money. So check out 247forlife.com. You'll be glad you did. All right, guys, welcome back. And let's get right into SmackDown Live. Listen, overall, I thought this was a very good show. Very good show. Why? Because it kept me engaged, and it's 2 hours long, which never hurts anything. So anytime it's a shorter show with higher quality content, sign me up. And so I enjoyed the show overall. I think that some of the big talking points coming out of this, to be honest with you, I mean, you have Kofi Kingston right at the top, and I'll start with that. And then I'm going to get to AJ and Randy, which I thought was very real. And WWE seems to have this theme lately of creating these real kind of shoot promos that I think when you do it too often lose their effectiveness. But I get what they're going for with AJ and Randy, and so I respect it. So let me start with Kofi Kingston and Vince McMahon, because that's what the show ended with. And it ended up being that Vince McMahon calling the two other guys of the New Day, with obviously Xavier Woods and Big E, they're these young bucks. Are they really that young, though? I mean, I guess they're a little bit younger than Kofi, but I mean, I don't know. I don't know. Maybe he was making kind of a wink and nod to AEW. I don't know. Maybe it's just coincidence, but whatever. I thought that Vince McMahon doing this put heat on himself. And what I don't understand is why the McMahons need to make this about themselves. Why? Why do we need to see the McMahons make this about themselves? I don't know, because there's no payoff here. What, you can't have Kofi wrestle Vince McMahon. Vince McMahon is a legitimate senior citizen at this point. There's no payoff there unless Kofi's going to knock out Vince McMahon at WrestleMania, which, fine, I'm cool with that. Vince still knows how to be a heel. I think Vince McMahon has lost a step mentally, and I don't mean that facetiously or try to be funny. He has lost a step mentally, and I mean that seriously. Like, if you look at Vince McMahon's promos, even 10 years ago, he seems more engaged and, for lack of a better term, with it more than he does today. He just seems like he's kind of sometimes lost out there. But nonetheless, Vince McMahon is making this about himself. And I guess that's because it's WrestleMania season. I don't know. And they're trying to tell that story of the babyface overcoming obstacle after obstacle after obstacle after obstacle to scratch and claw to get that opportunity to face Daniel Bryan for the WWE Championship. And when Vince McMahon says that Kofi Kingston has not, he's just not championship material, so he, I mean, is that, I mean, when you think about that logic, is Mustafa Ali championship material? I mean, he's been on the main roster for a cup of coffee. So, I mean, I don't know, I guess that's just heel Vince McMahon being heel Vince McMahon. And obviously, Vince is purposely not giving the fans what they want, stacking the deck against Kofi, having Daniel Bryan call Kofi a B-plus player, which I don't know if we all see the irony in that when the Authority called Daniel Bryan a B-plus player back at WrestleMania 30 when they were forced to put Daniel Bryan in that main event of WrestleMania and having him tap out Batista. So I don't, maybe that's a wink and nod to that. I don't know. But I understand the story. I think it was actually effective. For my critiques here about Vince, I still think it was effective. And at the end of the show, telling Kofi that you'll get your WrestleMania match if you beat Samoa Joe, if you beat Randy Orton, if you beat Eric Rowan. Oh, wait, no, excuse me. Just Rowan. It's just Rowan. Basically, if you beat these heels next week in a gauntlet match, you have your match. Well, I can already see the path here, and I'm fine with it. It's that the opponents for each of those heels is going to come out and interfere, either cause a purposeful disqualification or distract the heel, and Kofi will get a couple of roll-up fluke wins to advance himself to Daniel Bryan. So, ultimately, Kofi will get what he wants. But you have to be careful, because Vince McMahon didn't say you will get your WWE Championship match against Daniel Bryan at WrestleMania. I believe his words were somewhat to the effect of, you'll get your WrestleMania opportunity or something like that. He did not explicitly say you will get your WWE Championship match against Daniel Bryan in the main event of WrestleMania. So be careful, because Vince McMahon also let us know that we need to listen to what he says. Well, I listened to what he said, and he did not explicitly say that even if Kofi goes through these four men, that he will get that match, exactly that match at WrestleMania. So even if Kofi wins, maybe Vince comes out and says, Kofi, I didn't say if you beat these four men, and then maybe something extraordinary happens and Kofi beats the hell out of Vince, and I don't know, maybe there's some convoluted way, which seems to be all storylines at this point with WWE, of getting there. So just be wary of that. Ultimately, we will get that match. I mean, it's just a matter of time. We're all just supposed to be on this journey, and I'm on board with it. I really am. I'm on board with this storyline. I'm enjoying it overall. I guess we're supposed to be frustrated. That's the point. And I am, as a fan. I mean, I want to see Kofi get in that main event and beat Daniel Bryan. We all do. And so, again, I'm enjoying it, and I'll leave it at that. So we also got AJ and Randy. AJ and Randy, which kind of came out of nowhere. No pun intended. And initially I was like, well, yeah, I haven't seen much of these two go at it. They might have had a one-on-one. I believe they did have a one-on-one match earlier in 2018, but nothing that really comes to mind and stands out. So it feels like a fresh matchup. And I think that these two are going to put on, and could put on, one of the top three matches of the night. I believe that. Of course, that's going to really depend on the effort that Randy Orton feels like putting in. Ultra-talented guy that exerts about 25% of what he could to extend his career. And I understand and respect that. It's just a shame that we could see a Randy Orton that has tripled what his success could be right now. But nonetheless, we are talking about Randy Orton here coming out and basically shaming the journey that AJ took to get to the WWE. And it really felt like a Ronda Rousey type of production here, where she, if you guys remember, shamed Becky Lynch for the path she took to WWE. And so it seems like it comes from the mind of Vince McMahon that WWE is the end-all be-all, and if you're anywhere else, you're nowhere else. And that if you don't start in WWE and you're born and bred here, that you are just a muggle, for those of you who are Harry Potter fans. You're not a pure blood. You're a muggle, all right? So some of you are probably like, what the hell is he talking about? Harry Potter, okay? I've seen the movie too many damn times. But it seems that that mentality from Vince McMahon's brain tends to come out in storylines, and this is straight from the brain of Vince McMahon, who you know holds his nose to the independent scene. And AJ Styles comes out and says, I'm proud to be here, and that you had a lot of help, Randy. You know, I didn't ask my daddy for a job to get here, and that I clawed, and I don't regret any of the journey that I had to endure to get to WWE. And, you know, both guys made good points. I think the promos were heartfelt, which is really a good trend in WWE right now. I have to applaud whoever is signing. Well, I have to applaud Vince McMahon. He's the guy who is the end-all be-all in the creative, right? So I applaud creative and Vince for allowing the wrestlers to feel more organic and not just come out and cut a WWE promo. They let them breathe a little, and I'm enjoying it, and I really got engaged in this. They succeeded. Again, the goal, especially when you're leading up to any pay-per-view, most importantly WrestleMania, is every show should make you more interested in the matchup that they're trying to promote than you came in, than before you started watching the show. That should be the goal for every segment, for every program that they're trying to promote. And I'd say mission accomplished here. They did a very good job, both guys. I think that was the most relevant promo that AJ's had since he lost the WWE Championship. Conversely, I think it's the most effective promo Randy's had and the most emotional and real promo Randy's had in probably years. I mean, that's saying something. It didn't feel like Randy was just going through the motions as he does every single week. He's just kind of there. He does his pose. He might cut, you know, a 10-second promo. He'll give you a solid, smooth match, and he goes home. And he hits the RKO, and everyone goes crazy, whether you love it or hate it. And then you move on with your life, and you don't expect him to be in the championship picture, or be, if he is, not to actually win, or if he wins, not to hold it long. I mean, he's just kind of there. He's just the guy that's the constant presence there. That's a legacy star, and he's still able to go when he wants to go, but you know he's holding back to conserve his longevity. I mean, that's Randy Orton. So it's going to be interesting to see the effort that is put forth by Randy Orton at WrestleMania. All right, and then you had Shane McMahon come out and continue to go full heel. Yay. As I said, back when Shane McMahon won the Best in the World Championship trophy at Crown Jewel, that Shane should just turn heel. I'm tired of Shane playing the, we're supposed to believe that he can go toe-to-toe with these world-class athletes anytime. It's nonsensical. Yet it just was presented to us year after year after year since his return 3 years ago. And so him playing the heel here is refreshing. Shane can be a really good heel. I think it was a good time to do it. Shane had kind of run his course as a babyface since his return. I like it. He bullied the ring announcer. That's good stuff. Bringing out the Best in the World trophy was good as well, because that to me was the start of it. At least when I said, just turn him. Just turn him, my God, please. But it's just, again, contradictory to the whole, we're going to give you what you want. The infamous Triple H and Stephanie and Vince and Hunter all out there telling us they're going to give us what we want from now on. And yet Vince McMahon is doing the exact opposite from a storyline perspective. And then you have Shane McMahon turning heel, so he's not going to give us what we, quote, want. So Hunter and Steph, I guess, are the baby faces. The authority are the baby faces. This whole thing is just bizarre. I mean, I feel like it's going to be WrestleMania 2000 all over again, where we're somehow going to get a four-way with a McMahon in every corner. It really feels like that. But ultimately, the McMahons, as much as I hate when they make it about themselves, you can't deny the fact that when they're out there, it feels important. While it should be about the talent, and I 100% agree, the facts are the facts. McMahons draw ratings, and they draw attention. And your eyes are on the screen because they're the ones that call the shots on screen and behind the scenes. So as much as we may not like it and that they always have to make the story about themselves, the fact is they draw ratings and they draw eyeballs to the TV screen or iPad screen or phone screen, whatever maybe that you're watching. So I'm enjoying it again. The Miz not being there this week, I think, was fine. That builds anticipation for his return and wanting to see Shane get his ass kicked by Miz. I'm fine with it. I'm 100% fine with it, and I'm fine with the Miz turning babyface, full babyface, because we've seen him as a heel forever and ever and ever. It feels like 10 years that Miz has been heel. That's run his course as well. We've seen every iteration and version of the Miz, from the A-lister to Hollywood wannabe to just obnoxious heel to, well, I mean, we've seen it all. And now we get to see the portion of the Miz that we can accept and say, hey, look, we've hated you for a while, but we don't like Shane for what he did. And we're tired of Shane. We've booed you forever. Let's flip roles. And they think that's well-timed and well-done by WWE. I think the storyline is one of the more underrated ones heading into WrestleMania, so I'm excited for that. All right, so moving on in SmackDown Live, we had a women's segment here. And I've said this before, and I stand by it. The SmackDown Women's Championship, and this is sad to say, it hurts me to say it, feels irrelevant. it feels irrelevant. Asuka, who is over with the fans and gets a strong reaction regardless of how she's been booked, continues to get a strong reaction from the fans, even when her promos are just painfully awkward to watch. She has a great look. She's great in the ring. Her entrance is money. It's just her promos, obviously, are they're cringeworthy at times. Sorry, it's just fact. But she's in this semi-quasi feud with Sonya Deville and Mandy Rose, and you have Corey Graves acting like a 14-year-old boy that's never seen an attractive woman, who he goes gaga over any blonde that Vince McMahon actually finds attractive in real life and feels that hot blondes should always be the focal point of any wrestling division. I mean, just look at the history, folks. Sable, Tori Wilson, Trish Stratus, all women that he has made out with on air and been in a relationship with on air in storyline. And he has Charlotte, who he's shoving into the main event of WrestleMania. And you have Mandy Rose, who who Corey Graves is instructed to go gaga over. It's all coming from Vince McMahon. So again, you hear guys. I know I'm criticizing and applauding Vince several times back and forth throughout the show here, but it just has to be said. I mean, I'm not going to take one stance or the other against Vince. Vince is an evil genius. But when he does things that are just sophomoric and he just hasn't grown up from, I just call him out on it. I mean, that's just the way it is. And Vince McMahon is clearly instructing Corey Graves to act like, he's a freshman in high school who's going to a school dance, and he sees the hot older blonde girl who's a cheerleader on the football team and just, has his mouth open and he's drooling with his eyes popped out of his head. I mean, it's not becoming to Corey Graves to act like that, and it's not needed, especially in today's women's revolution or whatever era we're in. I don't need the sexuality of a female wrestler on TV, and unfortunately too, that's where Alexa Bliss is kind of headed too, and Corey Graves goes gaga over her too. I don't need to see that. We saw that painful era of the women's, back then, the Divas division. We saw all the nonsensical sexuality that didn't do anything for anybody. I mean, it was even worse back in the Attitude Era. I mean, women were simply sex objects on wrestling shows where they did just pillow fights and lingerie matches and, just nonsensical stuff that... Honestly, I don't know about you, but even back then when I was in my teens, it was nice to look at, but let's all call it like it is. I didn't watch a wrestling show to see that. I watched a wrestling show to, watch wrestling. That other stuff, that extracurricular nonsense with the women, if I wanted to see women in their lingerie or even less... let's use our imaginations here. This is I'm trying to make this a family-friendly show, but let's just say that there are other sources out there on the internet that will allow you to do so. How about that for a politically correct analogy? So, again, I don't watch a wrestling show to see that, nor do I watch a wrestling show to listen to a commentator who is has a mental capacity of a 14-year-old boy in high school going gaga over the cheerleader. And I'm tired of it. It takes away from Mandy's character, because I don't want to look at her and think sex object. I want to look at her and think athlete. I want to look at her and think, what is she here for? What's her objectives? And we don't know anything about Mandy except for the fact that she's an attractive woman. She's a knockout. There's no question about it. She is stunningly, mesmerizingly hot. I mean, let's just call it like it is. She is. But that's not what I care about when I'm watching wrestling. I don't want to be distracted by that when I'm watching wrestling. I want to care about, who is she? What is her mission? What is her personality? Is she a backstabber? Is she conniving? Is she manipulative? Is she badass? What does she do? Give me a history on Mandy besides what her outfit looks that night, or how much skin she shows, or how high up her boobs can get pushed with whatever outfit she's wearing. I mean, seriously, that's what we're at with Mandy Rose. And unfortunately, Alexa Bliss, who was defined as not as such, is getting redefined as somewhat of a sex object. And it's unfortunate. I don't need to regress with the women here. I'm trying to progress with the women. And I'm all for the women not being sexualized. I don't need to see that. Again, there are several, hundreds, thousands of other sources that you can go to if you're into that kind of thing. You guys know what I'm getting at. All right, I think I've made my point. But again, the SmackDown Women's Championship is just getting lost in the sauce. And it's really, really disappointing that is crazy and convoluted and at times just plain stupid that the storyline has been with Becky and Ronda and Charlotte. I don't need the collateral damage to be the SmackDown Women's Championship. I want to care. I'm trying to care about this championship. I'm trying. And I'm finding it very difficult to do so. It's hard right now. It's very hard. I want to care. And right now, WWE is not giving me a reason to. I'm trying to search for it. I don't even care if it's a promo every week with Asuka telling us what it means for her to be SmackDown Women's Champion. How her life has changed since she's been SmackDown Women's Champion. What she did for the 3 weeks that WWE just took her off the air. Maybe give us something. And instead, we're getting the story more about Mandy and Sonya Deville. Are they going to break up? Are they going to stay together? Do they have conflict? Are they going to attack? Who's going to turn? At this point, that should not be the story. We're going to WrestleMania. I want to care about the championship. I want to know what the champion's thinking, who her potential opponents can be. And right now, I think it's just that. Opponents. Unfortunately, it's opponents. I think this is going to be another multi-woman match. And probably more than three. It's probably going to be some kind of six-woman elimination match for the SmackDown Women's Championship. And it's a disservice to the title itself. Okay. Moving on to the Becky Lynch and Charlotte Flair segment. Thank the Lord that Becky Lynch found that genie, made a wish to get rid of that crutch and heal her leg. It doesn't look like it's fully healed, but thank God it's over with. I mean, I can't anymore. So they had another promo. Again, this whole rivalry seems like it's kind of spinning its wheels right now. Not much is happening. It was kind of similar to several confrontations that they've had in the past, but I think it was a good segment overall. I really do. But I don't think that they need to complicate this anymore. I'm still not a fan of the triple threat. I will say that until I go to my grave. But it progressed the story enough for me to care. Nothing major. But as we get closer, now we'll be closer to 3 weeks away from WrestleMania, and they need to really kick into high gear. Then we got Samoa Joe and Andrade versus Rey Mysterio and R-Truth. A fine match. Very good match. I don't like Joe losing. I know that he's irate and that he's flipping out that Mysterio beat him. But Joe just said he's unstoppable. Joe just made a proclamation that he's never going to lose the United States Championship. I don't need Joe losing. WWE has this habit, and they almost can't help themselves, of the only way anybody gets a shot is by beating the champion in a non-title match, which seems to happen over and over and over and over. And it just creates 50-50 booking, which makes it everyone's on a level playing field. Anyone can beat anyone on any given night. I need a hierarchy. I don't need a landscape level playing field. I don't need anyone thinking that anyone can beat anyone on any given night. I want a hierarchy, if that makes sense. I need Joe to be destructive. I need to redefine. WWE was on the right path by having him win the United States Championship. last or last week, I need him to go on a tear. I need to make him look unstoppable. I don't need to make him look like he could lose on a fluke roll up and have Mysterio win. Mysterio is a formidable opponent. I just don't like Joe losing right now at all, even in a non-title match. All right. So then we had Daniel Bryan and Rowan versus Kevin Owens and Mustafa Ali. It was good. I mean, just like the previous match I just talked about, it was good. I think that Rowan getting the win here was nice, that Rowan is being established as a legitimate threat. I'm fine with that. I think that Rowan needs some momentum, in which a character that has just been super stale, or even when he was in the Wyatt family, he was just kind of the forgotten redheaded stepchild. Kind of an appropriate analogy. And it just kind of always there. And to have him look and feel like a threat instead of just a punching bag for opponents, it's nice to see. So I'm fine with that. No problem there. And again, Ali, it's amazing that, yeah, I know he was put in a triple threat, and ultimately he shouldn't have been anywhere near that championship match at Fastlane. But he feels like he belongs right off the bat. It's amazing. He feels like he belongs right off the bat. And if they could go back to some more of those promos where he's like standing in the street and it's black and white and he looks like he's just kind of in his neighborhood hanging out, very effective. It's unique. It feels real. I hope they can go back to that. Maybe, you know, every once in a while to establish who he is. Give me a backstory. I like it. And this whole new Daniel Bryan, again, he's been doing, I think, really well. I'm liking the new Daniel Bryan. He's getting the response that he's trying to get, and that is people booing him. So, again, I really liked it. And, by the way, as much as I critique Vince McMahon in that segment with Kofi, Kofi was outstanding in that segment. He made you feel in that segment. He gave you the feels. He made you feel sorry for him, and you felt sad for him that he's never been able to go home and go trick-or-treating with his kids. He's missed weddings and birthday parties and everything. He made you feel. And he hasn't been rewarded with that, with a championship match, even an opportunity for one. I don't know where this Kofi's been. I don't even know where the New Day, being serious, were, to me, more entertaining than when they try to be entertaining with their nonsensical pancakes and positivity and all that stuff that's just, to me, well outstayed its welcome. They were serious for the first time in I don't know when. And Kofi knocked it out of the park with his promo that, to me, wasn't a promo. It was coming from a real place. And yeah, everybody else on the roster busts their ass. Everybody talks about busting their ass to be there. Well, guess what? Everyone else does too. And everyone else on the roster has missed birthdays, missed anniversaries, missed weddings, missed events, missed social gatherings, missed friends. Everybody on the roster makes those sacrifices and travel and wear and tear. But the difference is that Kofi, at least the story they're telling, and to some extent it's true, has not been rewarded with it yet. He hasn't been rewarded for his sacrifices where other people have been. So that's the story they're telling, that he's done all of this. He's been the good soldier, hasn't complained, done what he's told, comes out, I could do without the I'm here to entertain you nonsense. That was the only slight thing I didn't like. And way off topic, but when Roman Reigns on Raw said, these guys have been here and they've never let me down. Well, you know, except for the two times that they turned on you. But anyway, Kofi Kingston killed it on SmackDown. I don't know where this Kofi Kingston has been, but please bring him back. That's a real dude talking about his real sacrifices and bringing you into his life. And that, you know how it's not a promo? That was written and him just reciting it from his mind? Because you felt something. Anybody who didn't feel anything in that segment, you may want to, I don't know, look in the mirror. And if you don't see a reflection, that's because you're undead or something. I mean, really, it was, that's what I miss in wrestling. Is not the shoot stuff with Ronda calling wrestling fake. That's going way over the line. I'm talking about guys talking about their sacrifices and real life stuff that they've had to deal with. and the sacrifices they've made to be here, and they just want to get that opportunity. They've been that good soldier their whole career, and they just want that opportunity. That's what I love. That's what brings me in, and that, to me, exponentially, in my mind, made me support Kofi that much more and made me more excited to see him on his journey. And we all know next week he'll somehow overcome these insurmountable odds of those four guys he needs to beat. Well, he'll get there. We all know that. But the journey is what we're on with Kofi, and it's truly Kofi Mania. All right, guys. Well, thank you so much for joining me. I really, really enjoyed today's show. I feel like it was a really good show. I know it's just me, and I'm going to try to bring in more voices and more people from the wrestling land that we all love and sometimes love to hate, and bring on new voices. I always think it's good, as much as you may be mesmerized by my voice. It is always good to hear a fresh voice, a fresh opinion, whether you agree with me or don't. It's just always a blast, and I'm going to try to bring on more people. And if you're interested, here's a call to action. Tweet me at the WWE Podcast or DM me. Slide in my DMs if you're interested in coming on the show and you feel like you have a passionate opinion on the product. I'm really curious to hear what you think. And also, if you don't like ads, go to patreon.com/WWE Podcast. That's patreon.com/WWE Podcast and get all of these shows for ad-free. Ad-free, and it's only a dollar. As I said last week, maybe I'll stick with this. Holla for a dollar for the WWE Podcast. I really appreciate it. So that's all the time I got for you guys. Again, I'll be back on Sunday with maybe a wrestling nostalgia segment and or what if. One of the two. I can guarantee that as we head closer and closer to WrestleMania 35. That's all I got for you guys today. And as always, I'll talk to you next time.